Well, good morning. Like I said earlier, we are so incredibly excited that you guys are here with us as we push forward towards the finish line and embark on part four of this 5-week series that we have been working through called In the Meantime. And if you've been able to be here for any of the first 3 weeks of this series, what you know is that this entire series revolves around this very important question in our lives. This incredibly important question that oftentimes the correct answer to this question eludes us. And the question is this: what do you do when there's nothing you can do? Because for every single one of us in this room, we have experienced moments of our lives in which we walk through unfortunate circumstances. We've walked through moments of our lives in which we feel stuck in the mundane. We walk through seasons in which the best way to describe it is absolute adversity. And in the midst of those experiences in our lives and circumstances and adversity and trials and our in the meantime moments, we tend to find ourselves asking this question: what do I do now? What's the best way forward in light of the situation I find myself in? And that's what this series is all about. You see, unfortunately for so many of us, as we walk through life's greatest adversity, we have this tendency to focus on one of three lies. One of three lies that the enemy wants to use in your life and in my life to keep us stuck exactly where we're at. To keep us trapped in our in the meantime moments. And every single week during this series, I've told you that I'm going to bring these three lies back to the forefront. Because I believe that oftentimes our most powerful weapon in the midst of life's most difficult seasons is just to call out the lies for what they are. For us to keep our eyes focused on what isn't true in the midst of life's greatest adversity. You see, the three lies that Satan wants to use in your life and in my life when we find ourselves in difficulty, when we find ourselves in our own in the meantime moments, is one of these three things. First, he wants you to begin to believe that maybe you'll never be happy again. Because of what you're walking through and because of the relationship or the thing that was most dear to you has now been ripped out of your life. Because of that, there's just no way that you'll ever return again to the same degree of happiness and joy that you once had. Without that thing in your life, there's just no way that you'll ever be as happy as what you once were. Or he wants you to begin to believe that in the midst of this difficult circumstance, in the midst of this adversity, Maybe there's nothing good that can come from this. With how bad things are, even pushing through this, how could I ever experience something good on the heels of something so bad? And there can't possibly be a purpose in all of this pain. And maybe, just maybe, that when I get through this, things will be worse than what they were before. Or the third and maybe the worst thing of all, the enemy wants to get you to believe in the midst of our adversity, is that maybe there's just no point in continuing. And you've tried everything you could possibly try to make this marriage better, and nothing seems to work. And so maybe there's just no point in continuing. You've tried everything that you could possibly think of to make your finances better, and yet living by a budget doesn't seem to be fixing it. And digging out of this hole is taking a whole lot longer than what I want it to take, and this isn't fun, and so maybe we should just spend like we used to spend. Or maybe that I've been suffering with this illness or this mental hang-up in my life. And because of the anxiety and because of the depression, maybe this life just isn't worth continuing. And unfortunately, in our lives, when we begin to buy into and believe any one of those three statements that seem logical at face value, that seem to make sense, especially when we're in the middle of adversity and hardship, what we often miss is that buying into any of those three lies, it never moves us forward. Buying into any one of those three lies in the midst of our in the meantime moments, it keeps us stuck exactly where we're at. It keeps us from experiencing something better. It keeps us stuck in the midst of the hopelessness of our own adversity and trials and in the meantime moments. But there's good news. There is hope in our in the meantime moments. And that hope can best be found in the lives of people who came and lived through adversity before us. can best be gleaned in the lives of men and women who faced extreme adversity. Dare I say, more adversity than you and I have experienced in our lives. And they found a better way forward. And they desired to pass on that better way to you and to I. See, over the course of the last couple of weeks, the truth that we've been acknowledging is this. Is that the men and the women who brought us the stories of the life of the man named Jesus, the men and the women who lived the stories of the New Testament, the men and the women who brought us the writings of the New Testament, those men and women were no strangers to adversity. They lived life that was full of trials, and in the meantime moments, they lived lives that were full of difficult circumstances. And yet, in light of those difficult circumstances that those men and those women walked through in their lives, they never found a contradiction between a faithful God and difficult circumstances. You see, here's what I mean by that. Those men and those women thousands of years ago who walked through life's most adverse situations, they never found themselves struggling with the question, if God is good, shouldn't my life always be good? You see, they believed something better. They believed something bigger. They discovered something truer that made a profound impact, not just on their life, but on the lives of the people in the broken world around them. And what's so incredibly cool is this, is that as they found a better way through the adversity of their life, they chose to write the New Testament and to reach through history into your life and my life, inviting us to that better way, inviting us to a different solution, a different answer to the question, what do I do when there's nothing I can do? When I find myself in the midst of circumstances I never wanted to be in, how do I move forward? And one of the men in which we find giving us an incredible account of what it looks like to take positive steps forward in the midst of our adversity is a guy named James. Now, if you've been around CORE for any amount of time, you've heard a little bit of the backstory of James. But if you haven't, I want to catch you up on who James is. And so if you've heard this before, just stick with us over the course of the next 90 seconds or so. But what we know about James is this. James was the actual brother of Jesus. And for the first 33 years of Jesus' life, what we know about James is this. James is never found in any of the gospel accounts. Why? Because James does not believe that his brother is the Messiah. James does not believe that his brother is the Son of God. And if you think that is far-fetched, think about your own siblings for a second. How much would it take for your brother to convince you that he was the Son of God? I don't know if y'all have siblings like I do, but for me, it would take an awful lot. Amen. Yeah, right? My family's sitting back there in the corner. You see, for every single one of us, we know that it was a tall task for his brother to convince him that he was the Messiah. But Jesus took on that tall task. And for 33 years, James said, there is no way that you could possibly be the Son of God. And yet, in an afternoon, everything changed. You see, when he experienced his brother coming back to life. And in the aftermath of the tomb, they approached Jesus and they saw the holes in his wrists and the holes in his feet. Everything changed in an instant for James. And he began to realize that if some guy says he's going to raise from the dead and he actually does it, then maybe I should believe he is who he says he was. And in that moment, everything in James' life flips on its head. And he begins to live according to a different mission and a different purpose. And what we know about James is this, is that in the aftermath of this change, that as he begins to buy in to Jesus actually was the Son of God and Jesus actually was the Messiah, what we know about James is that James becomes the focal point of the local church at the epicenter of Israel. That James begins to launch the local church and become a leader in the local church right in the heart of Jerusalem. And as you can imagine, if you know anything about ancient history, about biblical history, what you know is this, is that in Jerusalem at that time, there were very few people on the heels of Jesus' death who actually bought into this whole thing called Christianity, this new way that was being presented by Jesus. And they began to believe that this was something that was really great while Jesus was here, but then he died on a cross and all of that went away. And because of that, many of them returned back to their roots of Judaism. And they began to protest and push against everything that was this new way. They began to seek out Christians. We know that from the story of Paul that we've talked about over the course of the past couple of weeks. That Paul was a Jewish man on the heels of the life of this man named Jesus. And what did he do? He thought that his mission and his purpose early in life was to seek out, persecute, and even kill as many Christians as he possibly could. That's the resistance that they found in Jerusalem. And yet James attempts to launch the church out of Jerusalem, attempts to begin to have these Jewish people buy back into this man named Jesus and the difference that he can make in their lives and in their eternities. And as you can imagine, starting a movement in the middle of a group of people who absolutely hate your movement causes a great deal of adversity. James found himself time and time again walking through his own in the meantime moments where things weren't going as planned and where he was facing resistance and he was facing backlash and it felt like one step forward and two steps back again and again and again in his ministry. And in light of everything that he was going through and all of the adversity that he faced time and time again, James decided in the midst of his adversity to begin to find something different as a way forward. And here's what's so incredible. In the midst of his adversity, and in the midst of different choices, different steps forward, James decided to put pen to paper and to write and reach through history to your life and my life, to your adverse moments and my adverse moments of our lives, and begin to speak into them, begin to invite you and I to something different in our lives. And we pick up this very moment in the course of history in the life of James in James chapter 1. If you haven't done so already, this is a perfect opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that weekly open, what you'll find in there is a notes page that we have designed specifically for you. It'll help you follow along as we move through the text. You can even grab a pen from the seat back in front of you and you can fill in some blanks as we go. That'll help you as you process through your own in the meantime moments in the weeks and the months to come. But this morning, as we dive into James chapter 1, we're going to spend the entirety of our morning in this one small passage. And we're going to break this down as we move. Starting in verse 1, here is what James writes. And I thought this was so appropriate right off the get-go to prove to you the backstory that I've just presented of James. James says this, "I'm James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ." You see, here James is acknowledging right from the get-go, all you disciples, all you people in the local church all around the world, I know that you have heard stories about me. And I know that you have heard that for 33 years, I lived in the same household as this dude named Jesus, and I did not believe that he was the Son of God. Well, now here I am today, and I believe. I am a servant and he is my Lord. You want to talk about words that you have to choke out of your mouth, right? Think about admitting that, yes, my brother now is my Lord and I am his servant. But this is what James is now admitting to. I want all of you all to know that I'm a follower of this man named Jesus Christ. And as I have followed him through the adversity that has been a part of my story and my life, here is what my steps forward look like. He says this. Consider it pure joy. And every reader, as they read that first line of this passage, of this letter that James wrote, they expected what was to come. And they were like, here, James is going to tell us, now that he's a follower of Jesus Christ, consider it pure joy, the blessings that will come when you follow Jesus, and the way in which Jesus will make you healthier and wealthier and 100% blessed 100% of the time. If that doesn't make sense, this is my challenge to go back to last week and make sure that you catch up as we talk through that. But that's not what we get James saying on the heels of that introductory phrase. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters. Whenever you face trials of many kinds, Now, James, you have completely went off your rocker. Like, you turned your life around. We get it. We thought you were off your rocker when you lived with the Son of God for 33 years and you didn't believe. But now you've come back around. But now you're trying to get us to believe that we can consider it pure joy when we walk through adversity. We can consider it pure joy when we find ourselves stuck in our own, in the meantime, moments of life. How is that possible? And James says, well, let me tell you. Because when you walk through those trials of many kinds, you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. You see, here's what I love about James, to give you a little glimpse. James is an absolute realist. And James, throughout his entire letter, has absolutely zero difficulty in acknowledging the struggle that you and I and him, that every single one of us as human beings will walk through. And what James immediately acknowledges right from the get-go of this passage is this, is that as you walk through adversity, what I know about all of us as human beings, and I'm not afraid to admit it, is this, is that every adversity of your life will test your trust in God. Like, if we were getting honest enough, we would all admit that to be true, right? It doesn't matter how long we've been a Christian. It doesn't matter how good of a life we have lived. The reality is, it doesn't matter how small or how large the adversity is. Every adversity we walk through in life, to a certain degree, always tests our trust in God. And James is saying, what I need you to understand right off the get-go of this passage, let's just lay it out there, is that as you walk through trials, as you walk through adversity, there will be effects upon your life and there will be effects upon your faith. And so let's just put it out there. You see, what James acknowledges first and foremost is that as you experience adversity and trials and your own in the meantime moments, every single trial you experience in your life, big or small, will always test your confidence in God. What James is saying is this. Every single time you walk through adversity, there will be this tendency in each one of us to ask this question. God, can I really trust you in this? Can I really trust that you've got my back? Can I really trust that you want what's best for me? Can I really trust that there is a purpose in this pain that I'm walking through? Can I really trust that you are going to deliver on your promise that when I am weakest, that's when you are strongest? When I'm at my worst, that's when you're at your best. Can I really trust all of those things that you are who you say you are and that you'll do what you've promised to do? Every single adversity we find ourselves in has us subconsciously asking those questions. And James says, I understand that. But when you answer in one of two ways, that's when the trials of your life, the adversity you walk through, will begin to develop something else in you. He says, when you either answer, yes, God, I can trust you. I will trust you in the midst of my adversity. Or I'm not so sure, but I'm going to keep going anyways. And I'm going to give you a chance. And I'm going to let this thing ride itself out and see what the purpose could be. And see if you're going to fulfill your promise. God, I'm going to give you a chance. And I'm going to trust you anyways. James says that's when the trials of your life begin to produce a persevering faith. What does that mean? James is saying that when we push through the trials of our life, those trials actually develop a faith in us that can withstand anything. Isn't that incredible? Any of y'all want that as bad as I do? To have a trust and a confidence and a faith in God that no matter what this world can throw at me, it will not shake it. That I can stand tall in the midst of that and that I can exclaim, God, I don't understand what in the world you are doing. I don't know what God is up to. I'm not shy to tell that to anybody. God, I don't know why I'm going through this, but I trust you anyways and that you're up to something. I want to have a persevering faith like that. And here's what Scripture proves to us, is that persevering faith is actually what honors God most. It's actually what makes God most pleased with us. But it doesn't stop there. Like, that's important, but that's not the end game of a persevering faith. The end game is that a persevering faith also gives God the most glory. What does that mean? That means that persevering faith is also the most compelling thing to a hurting, broken world that is watching you. I think sometimes we overlook that reality. Dare I say, That persevering faith is the most compelling trait of us as Christians to a hurting and broken world. Because without a persevering faith, our faith simply sways in the wind with our circumstances. And only in the good times do we stand up and proclaim God. But when we walk through the bad times, it's like we turn our back or we're going in a different direction or we can fix it on our own. And who wants to follow a faith that looks like that? There's enough other options in the world that look like that. See, a persevering faith is what the rest of the world is desperately searching for. And James says, so let that testing of your faith produce perseverance in you to keep going. But then when you keep going, let that perseverance finish its work. James is saying, hey, check this out. God is at work in you. Yes, even in the midst of your adversity, but you always have a choice. In the midst of your adversity, you and I always have a choice to hit the eject button. Do you realize that? In every moment of adversity, we get to make the choice. Do I want off this stinking ride? Right? Like, can I just throw in the towel and quit this? We always have a choice of the ejection button. And we look back over our lives, and probably for many of us, we see a time or two where we have chosen the ejection button because we had the divorce button available to us. We had the bankruptcy button open. We had the lie button open. We had the cheat button open. We had the alcohol button open. And we pushed that button because that button made promises that it couldn't keep. It promised you that if you just hit the ejection button and you get off this ride right now, there will be relief. There will be a temporary relief that is given to you if you just quit and throw in the towel and recognize that there's just no point in continuing. And yet James looks back and he says, wait, don't hit the button yet. Do a scan of your life really quickly for me. Look back over the moments of your life in which you have chosen that ejection button, in which you have pressed it. And what you will begin to recognize is this. When you hit the eject button, it didn't make your life better. When you chose that ejection button in your life, in your circumstances, it actually introduced more tension into your story. It actually made your life more complicated. It actually introduced more problems over the long run than what you had before. Don't make the same mistake again. Don't go down that path. Just ride this one out. Let perseverance finish its work. Why? So that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. James says that when we actually allow our perseverance to keep going, something develops inside of us. We grow into better versions of ourselves when we keep going. That there is actually a benefit in our lives, in our marriages, in our parenting, in our jobs, in our finances. That there is a benefit when we keep going through the adversity of our lives. You see, if you're sitting there and you are not a Christian, let me introduce you to this little dance that we Christians do. And Christians, this is an opportunity for y'all to buckle up for a second, because this one might be a little bit painful. I only know that because it's kind of painful to me. You see, for us as Christians, the dance that we typically do is this. We tend to ask this one question over and over and over again in our faith journey. How do I become a more mature Christian? Like, if you're anything like me, deep down, I don't really want the answer to that question because I know it's going to demand more, but yet I know it's the right question to ask, and so I just keep asking the question. And time again, as we have asked that question, the answer that we have gotten in response is this. The way in which you become a more mature Christian is by reading the Bible more. No. That just makes you more knowledgeable. The way in which you become a more mature Christian is by obeying God's commandments more. Nope. That just makes you more obedient. the way in which you become more mature, James lays it out right here, is by allowing perseverance to complete its work in you. That's how you become complete. There's no better definition of maturity than that, right? Completeness is maturity. James is saying, let perseverance complete its work so that you can become complete. And when we do this, when we practice riding out the hard times and keeping our heads up in the process, we become better versions of ourselves. We actually, check this out, we actually become spouses who are leading our spouses. Hello, y'all okay? We actually become parents who are worth following by our kids. We actually become coworkers who other coworkers ask the question, what does that dude, what does that woman have that I don't have? How could they possibly walk through that with their head held high? How could they keep going? How could they continue to believe in God and hold on to their faith in spite of all that? That we actually become compelling to the world around us that is searching for something better in the midst of their adversity. We become mature husbands. We become mature wives. We become mature fathers and mothers and daughters and sisters and brothers and friends and neighbors and coworkers in our lives. See, so long we've believed that spiritual maturity is simply signified by perfect behavior. That's not the truth. Spiritual maturity is always shown through persevering faith, not through perfect behavior. Not too often you're going to hear that from the stage of a church. You want the proof in the pudding of that? Think of the people in your life. We all know one or two who constantly act like they are the perfect Christian. They always make the right choices. They always make the right decisions. No matter what life throws at them, they're able to fake it like everything is always good and they're always going down the right path. Are those the people that are inspiring to us? Those people aren't inspiring. Those people are just intimidating. The people that are inspiring to us are the people, you know those people, that are just a little bit rough around the edges because life has taken its best swing at them time and time again because they have found themselves in the valley of the shadow of death and yet somehow they keep clinging to their faith and yet somehow they just keep going. We look at those people and we are in awe of them, not because of their perfect behavior. We are in awe of them because of their persevering faith, because of what life can throw at them. And yet they continue to keep their eyes focused, not on their circumstances, but on a God who is bigger than their circumstances. That's what the world is looking for in you and in me. And the only way we get to prove that is when we walk through adversity. And we keep walking. And we keep going. And we keep persevering. But James doesn't stop there. He continues. He says, man, I know that you're going to struggle with this. I know that you're going to struggle with continuing to move forward in the midst of your adversity. So let me give you another piece of advice. In verse 5, he says this, but if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Now, if you read that just at face value, you're like, what in the world is James doing? He just pulled something out of left field here, and we were talking about adversity, but now he's talking about asking God for wisdom, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You see, what James does here is absolutely brilliant. James is saying, did I say I love James because he's a realist? If I haven't said that yet, I love James because he's a realist. What James is saying here is, I understand that when you walk through adversity, that you are going to have questions. And it is okay in those moments for you to step forward and say to God, God, what in the world are you doing? I don't understand this. I don't see it. God, help me to see this from your perspective. That's what wisdom is. Check this out. I wanted to throw this in for you all so that you would have a good grasp on what James is talking about here. This is the definition of wisdom, and it's going to come up on the screen for you. It says this, wisdom is the ability to see current circumstances within a broader context. Wisdom is the ability to see your present adversity and see the bigger picture. Need an example of this? Those of y'all who have been parents to teenagers, you understand this concept to a T, don't you? Because you have been through moments of your life where your teenager walked through the door and they had what seemed like a ginormous problem to them. They came home from school. They came home from that date with that person. They came home from that practice. They came home from that get together with their friends. And the adversity that they were up against seemed to be crumbling their life. And in the moment, you did the perfect parent thing. You sat at the kitchen table and you asked them the question, man, what's going on? Why are things so bad? And it was like that one shooting star in your life where your teenager actually answered your question and they actually talked to you, right? And as they began to answer that question, they began to lay out just how unfair it was that that girl broke up with them, or their teacher said this, or their coach disciplined them in that way. And you sat there and you're like, hey, that's a big deal. That's a big problem. I understand why that's difficult. And then they got up from the table and they walked away. And the thought that went through your mind was what? If they only knew what real problems were, right? Because in your life, what you understand is that as you have walked through adversity after adversity, and as you continue to grow older, your adversity just keeps getting bigger and your problems keep getting more severe. You see things from a different perspective. You have a greater sense of wisdom around what adversity really looks like, and in the context of life, what will be small adversities and what will be large adversities. And you see, the reality is true with us and our Heavenly Father. Is that oftentimes he's able to see our adversity from the 30,000 foot view. And we keep looking at our adversity in the close-up view. And we're like, I don't get it. I don't understand why I have to walk through this. I don't understand why this is happening. And all the while, God sees the entire picture of what's going to take place in the next year or 10 years or 20 years because of this adversity. And James is saying, in those moments where you don't understand, it's okay to go to God and say, God, I just want to see this as you see it. Help me to understand this a little bit better, because I can push through if I can have a little bit better perspective. And what does James say there? It's so good. And when you ask something that mature, what does God do? He gives it to you. He helps you with your perspective. He helps you to begin to see a little bit more as he sees. And then James finishes in this way. But when you ask to see as God sees, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. And the reason that I chuckle in the middle of that passage is because scholars actually believe that James is throwing a little dig in at Peter here. That the disciples, after Peter got out and walked on water and he began to sink, that for years and years and years, Peter took jeering from the rest of the disciples. And so here, James throws a little dig in. Like, you remember what Peter did in sinking? Because he took his eyes off of God and he placed them on his circumstances. When we do that in our lives, that's the exact same thing that will happen to us. And you can just imagine Peter as he's reading this letter is like, shut up. I didn't see the rest of you bozos getting out of the boat. And James, you're one to talk. You lived with the Messiah for 33 years and you didn't believe in him. It took him raising from the dead. Who are you one to point out that I was the one who was sinking on the water? And yet James puts this in there and he says, as we go through our adversity moments, our in the meantime moments of our lives, we will have this tendency for our eyes to drift to our circumstances. But when you just look at your circumstances, it will always undermine your faith. It will always take the legs of your faith out from underneath of you. And so you take your eyes off of your circumstances and you place them firmly on a God who is bigger than your circumstances. And all this, James is simply saying, I'm asking you not to do, I'm asking you to believe. To believe that in the midst of your adversity, God is up to something. God is up to something inside of you. God is up to something to mature you. to make you more complete, to make you a better version of yourself. God is up to this work that makes you a better husband, that makes you a better parent, that makes you a better coworker, that makes you a better neighbor. And when you believe in that and you keep going, not only, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, on the other side, do you get to see what the purpose was? But also on the other side, as you press through this adversity, you get to become more complete. You get to become more mature. You get to become the best version of yourself as God intended you to be. That's what our world needs. That's what our world needs to see in the midst of our in the meantime moments for the sake of their in the meantime moments. And James is saying, this is the bottom line. I'm asking you to endure to mature. Endure to mature. God is trying to use what he has not removed yet. Not just in your life, but in the life of your spouse, in the life of your girlfriend, and the life of your coworkers, and the life of your kids, and the life of your friends, and the life of your neighbors. God is trying to use that adversity to speak something into their lives. You want to start becoming compelling and inspiring to a hurting, broken world? Believe that God is at work in you to mature you. And keep going. With me. Father, this morning, God, we thank you for what a great God you are. And again and again and again, I come back to that truth. That you are a God who loves us enough not to sugarcoat life, to make it clear that in this life we will have troubles, there will be adversity, we will walk through in the meantime moments, and yet, if we keep going, if we persevere, if we hold on to our faith in the midst of that adversity, on the other side, we become more mature. We become complete. We become who you created us to be. And so, God, this morning, may we have the courage to keep going. May we have the courage to let perseverance finish its work in us and to resist the temptation to hit the eject button in this moment of our lives. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.